that all of it is a lie. That was the point that I found myself needing to drive home the most. The credit score is a man-made number made by racist people, if we're being honest. Let me just calm down a little bit.
Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is Culture's Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me on other platforms as Leo Grand Prince, but however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate of financial literacy, generational wealth, and financial health. I have another good guest with y'all today. This is an old friend, like UB old friend. We went to college together. She was actually my graduate assistant when I was doing student, like, what do they call it, Becca? Like, financial
work study.
Thank you. Work study. So I would like you guys to welcome Rebecca Bach to the show.
Hey, everybody.
So Becca, tell them a little bit about yourself before we get into the nitty gritty.
Lord, see, that's the hard part, because then you get to talking about the UB days, the days that I forgot. Like, I done lived so many lives, it's hard for me to keep up. I was a supervisor there. That was my graduate assistantship, so that helped me pay for grad school. But it wasn't quite enough, because I still have them loans, so Biden come through, and if you don't, somebody gonna have to. But anyway, I digress. I'm a life coach. I have been coaching for 3 years now, but really my entire life. I discovered an ability that I have, and I'm using that gift to help other women uncover their gifts. So that's what I do. And I do that here in Costa Rica now full time.
Okay. So in this journey, tell people what a life coach is, because you got so many in this thing of influencers and coaches these days. You got your financial coaches, you got your marketing coaches. What is a life coach? What are you coaching specifically?
I love that question. I love how you broke it down. There are so many types of coaches. I do like to distinguish myself from the term that is popular today. What I do is I help people unpack their thoughts. So I'm an active listener. I'm trained through Coactive Training Institute. And basically what that is, you know, two people who are naturally resourceful, whole and creative, walking alongside each other, and I'm helping them using powerful questioning to uncover different things that are already within them, but have usually been suppressed by trauma or just the systems that they've constantly been operating in. And I kind of help people see their blind spots by picking up on patterns and what they're saying, tone, body language. I observe all those things, and then I help them draw conclusions that they probably didn't have the confidence to draw on their own and just needed a little pull or a push. And then the goal is to help you move forward. So I provide accountability and strategy for how to adjust after you make those discoveries about things from your past that are keeping you from existing in the way that you should today.
Now, for people who don't know, is life coaching really, is it a big business? Do a lot of people seek out those type of services?
That you are asking all the right questions. So I felt that way when I was thinking about stepping into the industry. I did the research because I kept on feeling the calling. I literally was confirmed numerous times just talking to people, and they're like, wow, this is like having a life coach. And I would distance myself from that term because of the same reasons that people in our community distance themselves. And it's kind of like one of those taboo things where it's like, if you need one, then something's wrong with you. And the same way that we see therapy, the same way that we see all types of things that are in society to help us, we kind of distance ourselves from them for so often prideful reasons, ego reasons, et cetera. So nevertheless, I distanced myself. But when I started to do the research and realized that there was a demand for it, and I found out that Oprah even had a life coach, I realized if Oprah needs a life coach, then there are people in this world that will value life coaching. So I'm going to do it. Found a training, went through the process, left my job, and I started coaching.
Now, that's the part I want to talk about in terms, because, you know, this is a financial literacy, entrepreneurial, you know, type of show. When was the business fully established before you decided to take the leap into life coaching fully?
Oh,
how did you find the confidence? Did you have to life coach yourself to take that leap?
Those are all really good questions. So I am not the person that's going to tell you, you have to leave your job to be an entrepreneur. I have a balanced approach. I see the pros and cons. I see the benefits of both. I recognize that my job, the nature of my work as well, is very demanding. I worked in nonprofit. So you're constantly giving to others. And what happens is we constantly find ourselves giving to other people's visions or in the way of how we serve in the workplace or to someone else's vision, like the boss. And I realized that I was never going to get to my vision if I didn't completely break free from that. I was a people pleaser. And so I was constantly in that cycle. So for me and my journey, it was necessary that I break away. And God has blessed me tremendously with so many resources and the ability to have the confidence and to also get to this point where I'm completely relying on him. And that's a very recent change. I literally left my last day with my job was March 12th.
Oh, wow. So
I still have at least one check coming, and then it's fully on my own. All of my income that comes through this business is what is sustaining me. And that is something that I had to conquer. That is something that I had to coach myself through, get coaching for. I still have a coach right now that's helping me change my money mindset by unpacking things that are existing within me. So coaching has been tremendously helpful in giving me the confidence to see differently, operate differently, because that's the part that we often miss. We don't know that we're missing it. We don't know why we don't want to do the things that we know we need to do. And it's because of those blockages that a life coach or counselor can help you get through. And so once I realize the shift that needs to exist in my mindset, I'm operating differently, and then I'm available to and attracting the things that are meant for me. So that's what coaching has helped me do. And that's how coaching helped me get the confidence to be here. And now I'm just her. Like, I'm literally just living it. And it's an absolute dream. It's something that I thought would never happen. You want and you hope and you pray. But to actually be living it after you just break through that mindset, woo, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I feel really, really blessed.
You sound at peace. Like, I want the listeners that I can see her. Me and Becca recording on Zoom. I can see the peace in her face. Like, it's there. It sounds like you found that. It's like that purpose-driven life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's that. It's aligning with that. That's exactly it. I'm just so happy and grateful. And I feel like it's possible for everyone.
So talk to me about your clients. What is, so far with the clients that you've had, what is the most common thing that people come to you for life coaching for? Is it relationship? Mm. Is it self-purpose? I'm thinking it's money because I'm financial literacy. What is the most life issues that people come to say, hey, I need coaching with this?
So usually it's, I'm unhappy and I'm trying to do this, but I just don't feel like doing it. Mm. So it's like, I kind of have an idea of my purpose, but I just don't feel like it most of the time. And then we get to unpacking the relationships and the people that they're around and how they spend their time and what their habits are. And, you know, that all bottoms down into usually something rooted in their childhood, something that they observed and didn't know that they had adopted as a mindset and a practice and a ritual that they were comfortable in. And so the idea of being different made them scared. So ego and pride and everything piles on top of that. And then we say things that we don't actually mean and live in worlds that we don't actually desire to. So I say all that to say it all usually comes to me as something simple as I'm unhappy or I want help moving forward with this idea. And then we get to the root of whatever cycle they existed in their household. We change their mindset around that and forgive whoever needed to be forgiven. And then we're just operating differently. We're not operating from a wounded space where we're needing to protect ourselves. You're just free and open and available to kind of receive the things and be the person without fear of judgment and everything. So I'm saying a whole lot, and I bet a lot of people that are listening can relate. You possibly do as well, but that's really what it is. We often are being held back by this cloud of stuff. And so as a life coach, I just help you pierce through the cloud and see what you actually need to see and remove what, you know, you probably just are uncomfortable removing on your own. And then you're there. And my clients are like literally living that.
No,
they are literally living this transformation. And it amazes me too. Literally today, the session that I had at noon, and this happens every single time. Wow, I didn't know that we were going to go there. I didn't know that was going to happen. I wasn't expecting that. We're never expecting it. But the thing is, I don't come with an agenda. And that's how I like to distinguish myself from coaches. A lot of coaches have a program with an agenda. Now, there will be a time where in order to educate people, I will create a course. But a lot of the times no one should have an agenda, but what's present in the moment. And that's usually the thing that's clouding us from taking the next step in any direction. But when you have an agenda, you miss out on that stuff. So I don't have an agenda. they come with their agenda and I just coach them through whatever it is we figure out what the bottom line is.
So that's so dope. So you don't have a template for how you approach all your clients. Every client is a blank slate. Everybody gets a unique framework, a unique strategic plan. So you're just not, you know, regurgitating the same
thing.
You're not a DJ. You're not playing the same songs every week.
Exactly. Oh, no, even the thought of that exhausts me. And I like everything is fresh, organic. A lot of times it's things that I'm just recently getting revelation on and clarity about. And it's exactly what they needed to hear in that moment. So it can change every single week. And they're coming with something different every single week. We all literally have to different makeups of our days, the people that we're dealing with, like how can anyone have like the formula? And I believe that that's the beauty of God is like everyone's unique and he's speaking something very unique to them. And my business is very much spirit led. So to avoid getting preachy, I'll just say that part, like it's a gift and like I'm working with the Holy Spirit to pull out these things. And so he's going to have something different every single day for every single moment of whatever you're going through. And my goal is just push you back in the direction of God's voice, so that you can activate that on your own in your private time.
So in this coaching, I'm assuming you've done both men and women at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do people ever come to you because does the life coaching they need? I know you say some people say, oh, I'm unhappy doing this. Does a lot, because I hear this a lot on social media. Everybody always says money will fix my problems. I just need more money and all that. Is from your perspective as a life coach, do people have a money issue or is it the under-rooting issues that contribute to the how they have a relationship with money?
It's definitely the relationship. It's definitely the history and the mindset and just all the stuff that gets piled in there that we're told to believe is true. But if you look at the people that you're listening to and realize that they're, you know, you got to really know people by their fruits. You got to know things by their fruits. And so we all are stuck in a bunch of systems based on what we saw. And you literally don't know until you know something else, until you're taught something else. And so much of it is just getting out there, getting the knowledge. And then we all will realize, oh, wow, this is way different than what I thought. And then it becomes less work to get the money and more just, oh, like you have the wisdom to make smart decisions with your money. I think that's really important, is being able to expose yourself to the right information and trust it to break the cycle.
So talk to me about people's blockages. Like, are people stubborn about the implementation? Sometimes you're trying to, they come to you willingly, mm-hmm. but we all know people go to therapists willingly, but they still don't take the advice. They go get counseling in their church. They don't take the advice. So what's your experience about, you know, Black people coming to you saying, I want life coaching about moving on, but they won't give, they won't bend, they won't break.
That's so real. There's so many parts of that question that are so real, but I'll just go straight to the point. A lot of times the stubbornness exists as a protective thing. When you have a
ego,
coach,
is it ego?
It is. Most things are rooted in ego. Like most of our problems, like most of our diseases, like a lot of it is rooted in ego. So yeah, it can usually boil down to that. And then it's like, okay, so how did the ego, like what is the ego trying to protect? And then underneath there is the wound. Our ego is like trying to shield and protect us and it's coming off as bravado or other things, but it's just
SAT
trying to protect something
word.
That's there.
So, I love bravado, SAT.
So here's what happens when you have a coach who is somebody who literally is there to serve you and your agenda, like they're focused on you. They're neutral. They don't have a stake in the matter where family members have a stake. They want things to go a certain way. So their response to you is generally going to be filtered through their lens and their perspective. But when you have a coach, somebody that's outside of that, then you can build that you can have that vulnerability because you've built that trust. So you definitely want to have a coach that you can trust because you're kind of bearing parts of yourself, insecurity that you don't show with anybody else, not a boss, not a friend, not a peer, not a sibling. And so you come with all of that stuff and then you're able to see, oh, that's why I'm stubborn. But this isn't something that I want any longer. Here's how I can be different. We create the strategy together and then you walk forward. But that stubbornness just has to be let down and we normally can't because we're constantly in environments where we have to protect ourselves from rejection, from all these other things. But you have a coach who's free of judgment. Like you are safe to say whatever it is. And our goal is just to help you move forward.
You calming me just doing the interview. Like, is this how you talk to people? This how you reel them in?
I just be being myself, but I've been hearing that it's a soothing voice.
It does. And people jokingly tell me that I have a podcast voice. I don't know what
you do. As you were doing the intro, I was like, okay, podcast voice.
I don't know, but you have that soothing voice. You have that voice that naturally, I feel like people trust you just the way you are, because it's very non-judgmental. It's very sympathetic. It's like you're waiting to hear what they need. Help me help you. That's the voice that you have. And you said that you've always been a life coach, but it wasn't until you moved into the industry you realized everything had prepared you for this. What were there things? Like, what did you do, or what were you doing throughout your life that brought you here?
So when I say that I've lived many lives, there was the me that you experienced as your boss at UB. Mm-hmm. I worked in childhood development. I was a Playworks coach. So I did, I facilitated recess and conflict resolution and leadership building with the kids there. And I was there when like they were crying and like I needed to boost them up and things like that. That was something that came natural to me. I excelled in that arena. I worked in mental illness and substance abuse, where I was a residential counselor. And I'm counseling people who have substance abuse, and I'm seeing them walk away from drugs. I'm seeing them walk away from toxic friendships. I'm working in fitness and physical fitness. When I was at University of Maryland for my undergrad, I was a gym supervisor there. And for 3 years, I was there coaching people, letting them, making them feel good about themselves, pushing them, having them push a little harder. The supervisors, my supervisors, like I was always, especially when I got into nonprofit and I was a director at a nonprofit, and I found that leadership was coming to me within weeks of me being there, within days, really, seeking out my wisdom and things like that. And so I just found this connection between me genuinely caring about people's stories. Like, I'm there to give the person meds, but next thing you know, we're talking about, you know, when their grandma died and their cat died and how like they were on the brink. So then I find myself leaving the nonprofit arena because I'm finding that this is a gifting. It's being beefed into my job description. I actually had the organization pay for the training that I went to because I was like, okay, there's clearly a common theme here. And I'd rather do this than the other parts of this job. So how can I make it a lifestyle? I was really committed to just cultivating the lifestyle that I wanted for myself. And so that was how I was able to see the thread. And then I had to embrace the discomfort of taking on a title that I felt was rejected and frowned upon. And then I just started doing it. I started doing it in the evenings for friends, and I just put a price tag on it, and people were showing up and they were like, wow, this is really helping me. And so I had to, kind of remove all the negativity around it and just continuously just trust my gift, trust the feedback. And so I was just building feedback over the years. And now the gift was already there. The whole experience that I was going on was already there. I tried 11 majors in college and could not figure it out. Thought I was going to go to law school. Like, I did all of the things. And on one hand, being an aggressive learner in that way has helped me cultivate the experience that does give me the insight and wisdom that most people need to hear. But then there's that other part of nothing ever quite fit. But because I didn't just settle for something for the sake of having a number that I wanted to reach in life as far as wealth, I just was committed to finding that. And I don't know, maybe everyone has that. Maybe I just am, a rare person that does. I don't know, but I kind of broke through all of that stuff. And so it gives me the freedom to be able to do this and just help other people do it, in the hopes that they can experience that too.
You went exactly where I wanted to do. And people probably is like, Jamal, like, what does life coaching have to do with financial literacy and all that? You brought it home because I feel like people are always pursuing, like you said, a number, financial wealth and all that in a very narrow framework. Everything's about, what they see on social media and everything. And I wanted you to point out the fact that, and I've experienced this too, that you didn't get to the place of purpose right away. You had to try different things, and several different jobs and areas led you to that point. And so many people think you got to have it figured out at 21 because Zuckerberg made Facebook at 21. It's a reason it's called a unicorn. It's a rarity. So I just want, and I think you're the person perfect to talk about this, being a life coach, that people don't have to have it all together. Sometimes it is a process of experiencing multiple things, especially when you're doing things like entrepreneurship, investing, like stock market. I think people make them more simplistic than they are when they're very layered structured.
You know how I got that way? Someone was successful, decided that they wanted to capitalize on this system. But it was their system. But because they were wealthy enough, people would listen And then everybody's just decided to adopt their system.
Come on, Becca, preach now. Come on.
What ends up happening is we're living out their vision. And because of our bondage to money, all of us are doing it. And we're making them wealthier while they make a buck off of bringing us into their system. And that's the reason why I shy away from that when it comes to coaching. I moved to Costa Rica because I saw that it was affordable to live here. And I knew that I wanted to cultivate a lifestyle where I could reach the women that I want to reach with my coaching business without having to create a bunch of stuff just to bring them there and then miss out on the stuff that actually is what's needed. I hope I'm making sense. Mm-hmm. But I want to be covering and honoring of like those systems and those models. Like there are people, everyone has an agenda, everyone has a goal. And my goal truly is to help people and to fulfill my mission here in this world. And so I was like, how can I do that in this system of America where it's just a bill on top of a bill on top of a bill on top of a bill. Everyone's capitalizing off of everyone. One of my lives, the most recent one that I left, I left the nonprofit as a director to become a coach, came across a job as a financial coach. And I was like, got coaching in the title. And I had just recently started doing financial literacy workshops for kids because I was frustrated when I was trying to buy my house that I did not know enough to qualify for the loan. I was just like, I'm a whole, you know, multi-degree carrying grown woman out here doing well, making money. And you're telling me I don't qualify because my credit score is butt. But because I wasn't educated on the credit score in college, I chucked that thing right after grad school. I paid everything off, closed it. I said, I never want to use credit in my life. Fast forward to when I want to buy my house. And it's just like, where do you even begin? So nevertheless, I learned the steps and I turned it into a curriculum. I started doing that in after school programs. And in like fair days at different schools from DC to Baltimore. And it was amazing. And so I took both of those experiences, my desire to be a coach and desiring to educate people on financial literacy. I started to teach it to adults, returning citizens who are coming out of jail, coming out of homelessness, coming off of drug recovery programs. And I'm teaching them these principles as well. And I'm seeing the fruits, like they're actually one, like a lot of the times in these nonprofits, you have somebody that's like, here's how you get a bank account. This is how much the interest is, da, 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 da. And then they send you on your way. But I'm actually unpacking like real life things. Like, what are the reasons why we're so afraid of dealing with money? Why are we so secretive with our money? All of the bondage that exists in that also led to the lifestyles that led them into the situations that they were in. I'm unpacking all of that. And I'm delivering a workshop every other weekend, every other Friday. And I'm coaching them one-on-one. I'm still getting text messages today from people that are like, thank you so much for the way that you poured into me. Like they're actually owning cars with better interest rates. They're actually seeing triple digit increases in their credit scores. They're actually buying houses. They're actually experiencing financial freedom. And so again, that's an example of how my gifts showed up there. And it kind of led me to this place where, again, I love financial literacy. I love teaching it, but I really care about what's going on in your heart. Why are you choosing the same female and being put out by the same type of female and still going back to the same type of female? And it's messing up your career. It's messing up your finances. It's messing up all these other things. And so that's how you have me here. That's the relevance to financial literacy. So much of it was me stepping out of a rat race that then takes you away from like the actual gift. And I cultivate my gift in the presence. God, I cultivate my gifts in a space of rest and communion. And so, like I said, my last day was March 12th. This has been the most successful season in my business yet. And I'm looking forward to what quarter two will look like by me just clearing the path and making it possible for myself to thrive in business.
Just to double back to what you were saying when you were teaching the financial.
I know that was a mouthful.
No, to double back what you were saying when you were teaching the financial literacy workshops. What was the most prevalent things you realized that we as a culture didn't know? I know you said when you were buying a house, you didn't know the importance of the credit score because you paid off everything when you graduated college, not knowing that would be detrimental to you buying a house. What were, when you were teaching the workshop, what were other things that other people didn't know that turned out to be basic financial literacy things that all people should know?
So I'll say two things. I'll say first, I was surprised by how little was known about any subject. And the reality was there were people that came in having history of like, you know, owning properties, you know, et cetera, you know, life turned around and, you know, things got rough, whatever, they ended up homeless, but they still have the knowledge. They were still eager to know more because we often still only have a very limited amount of knowledge. And so they were all, what I always like to do is just kind of bring a balanced approach. I'm not going to tell you gambling is bad, don't do it, but I'm going to tell you why investing is a better option. I'm not necessarily going to tell you, you know, how to budget for the finances, but I'm going to tell you how to have the balance of like being, you know, having joy and, you know, being frugal. So really getting at like the kind of the core issues was my aim. And I feel like I'm moving away from the question itself. So if you don't mind repeating it.
It's just like, what did you find that your students in the seminars, what did they lack most in knowledge about financial literacy, you know, credit scores, banking, that type of thing?
Yeah, I think that it was everything, like I was saying, but then I think it all boiled down to kind of a fear of something that they didn't know. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes back to what we were saying, that pride blocks us from experiencing the stuff that we actually need to know. So I think that the other thing, yes, come back to me, that all of it is a lie. That was the point that I found myself needing to drive home the most. The credit score is a man-made number made by racist people, if we're being honest. Let me just calm down a little bit.
No, go off. Like, it's the culture's money. Go off. No, go off.
It is the culture's money. But I want to give it to you as real as I would give it to them in class. Like, when I did the research and I got down to the history of it, like, the way that the system was run before was somebody would go knocking on your doors and inspecting what you had in your house and then reporting back to the rich people to say, oh, yeah, they might can be able to pay you back on time. Oh, yeah, no, they're not doing so good. So let's mark this up. It's such an invasive and like ridiculous system to begin with. And it was just someone's idea who had the money to market it and make it a big thing. Then you have these mathematicians and then everybody contracts to one together. And they're all making billions off of making people sick to their stomachs about their identities. Like, we attach our identity to it. So the reality is, when you realize that it's literally a number orchestrated to make you feel that way, then you free yourself from that mindset. The alternative is to kind of reject it altogether. And then it kind of keeps you in that cycle of not being able to experience things. And so I find when people kind of have that mindset shift of, it's all just a lie, it's all man-made and orchestrated this way to make me feel the way that I'm feeling, so I'm going to actually like operate outside of it, play the game because I know that it's a tool, but also operate outside of it so that I can like live my life. And then you just have the right conversations. You realize like the people calling you that are debt collectors literally have no authority. They're trained to make you feel a certain way. So when you realize that, you're like, actually, y'all get that when I'm able to give it to you. And here's the plan. This is what I'm able to do. Like, you just talk as someone who has stake in the matter, because you do. At the end of the day, they want your money. You can always negotiate. So I'm helping them, showing them, you know, right in front, this is how you negotiate this type of situation. So in the future, before you just accept whatever they're telling you, try this approach. And my coworkers doing the same approaches. They're literally getting the same responses. When you boil it down to, these people are human, but we're trained to see them as like big, mighty, scary, and foreign. And it's all about gathering information. So I encourage people to be curious, ask questions, and know that you have stake in the matter. At the end of the day, like, you literally have so much more power than they make you feel. So you don't take what they're saying. And usually you realize, actually I do have authority here. And then, you know, so that's what it is. I want people to walk in their authority. And so I took authority of it. I was living in a space where my relationship with money was, I needed to hold on to it because I needed to create a different future than I experienced. But I realized that even that was lack. It was beneficial for the season that I was in, but I've elevated to a new season of, okay, now that I have that money and I've amassed that certain level of security, what am I going to do to invest it so that I can actually get to that future that I'm trying to like scrape stuff together for? And so my mindset is, like, as you can see, elevated. There are things that I taught, you know, just a year ago that I'm now seeing differently. But I think that we all go through different phases. So that's the thing about financial literacy, is like, you might not get it right now, but still be open to it. Because when you mature to that level, things are going to click and make sense. Right now, I've invested in a coach that's helping me understand options and understand, you know, more aggressive ways of investing than I've ever trusted myself to do. But it was because I was afraid. And I realized I was afraid of numbers. We have a school system that basically trains you to be afraid of numbers. Math is awful. Like, God bless the math wizards who, like, you know, overcome that. But math really is an awful experience. And so when you have a bunch of adults who have PTSD from math class, we resist numbers. So we resist bills and we resist spreadsheets and we resist accounting and we resist taxes and we resist all this stuff. And you're resisting money. I was resisting money. So I said, I'm going to learn.
That's a bar, Becca. They resisting money. That's a bar.
Money is numbers. And it's designed that way. They are designing it that way. So that's the stuff that I would teach. It is designed this way. When I say they, those wealthy white men are designed, they're in rooms saying, no, don't teach them that. Don't teach them that. They're literally saying, don't teach them that. Why? Because if they can keep us in the rat race, just always being a consumer, but God is a good judge. So
you got the oil over there. Like you put the oil in the house. Like I called it the right time.
So yeah, I'd be trying to break mindsets. And I was doing that in the workplace as best I could with the anointing on it, with the Holy Ghost, with Jesus. I would leave those classes knowing that there was a spiritual warfare going on. And I would have to soak myself in prayer because the enemy did not like that they were being broken free. When I tell you, people still text me. I make sure that they all stay in touch with me on Facebook. They are doing so well. It's mind-boggling, but we literally reject them in society. Literally the most rejected in society. We're just like, they're done for. They're always going to go back to addiction. And yes, we've seen family members that exist in that cycle, but there is truth that there is proof that they can be free. And I believe that so strongly. So that's just where my faith lies. But anyway, so, you know, as you see, I get really passionate about this stuff. And so my business.
Don't apologize. I want them to feel your passion. That's why, that's why the show's not scripted. I like the organicness of it because I think that's what people draw people to. It's like, I don't want to have, like you said, I don't want to have scripted questions because you do this. Oh, what is this? Is this? It might start off a little bit to give people background, but I want it to go where you want it to go. But the last thing I want to talk about before we get to Tom is tell people how in a pandemic you left the what people would consider the most free, loving country in the world with all the options.
Wow. To live in.
I know people would consider that.
You still left, think that?
Yeah, they think that you left the States to go live in Costa Rica. Like what triggered that? How different is the cost of living and how long do you plan to stay? And what
I love this
and what should people do? And what should people do if they decide that they're going to go live internationally? What steps should they take?
Yes. I love this question so much. So the easiest answer is read. Like I said, I thrive on learning. So that skill set in of itself, that passion, orders my steps. I was like, this is crazy. I don't know what's going on in the world, but I'm a traveler and I can't really take this no more. So what if I just went remote somewhere? I knew that I was ready to put my house on the market. Nobody saw 2020 coming. So for me, my house was meant to be an investment property. I'm a super host on Airbnb. Never not been a super host. But obviously, you know, traffic is different and I'm just feeling stuck and stagnant in the house or whatever the case may be. So I got bored and I was trying to figure out, okay, what can I do? Something did happen that kind of was traumatic and made it so that I really, really, really wanted to get away. And so the opportunity kind of presented itself and I just did a bunch of research. I think it looks crazy right now because I'm just now telling people, but I had been kind of plotting this for a while. I'm doing the research and I found articles where it was talking about how expatriates thrive in Costa Rica, especially in a season where we're all working remotely. You can literally post up, pull your laptop out, get Wi-Fi, and live on $1,000 a month. That was the other thing. The cost of living here is $1,000 a month. So I was like, it's a no-brainer. Instead of trying to like struggle to continue to pay to live here with all the expenses that come with it, they were raising my taxes double the tax bill from $3,000 to $6,000. So I was just like, wow, the stuff is...
God bless Baltimore City, bro.
I was like, the stuff is piling up. And while I'm so blessed to be able to manage it to the point that I have, like, I don't know what 2021 is going to look like. And I'm not about to wait around for, you know, to figure out, you know, what's going to happen or whatever. So the other part of it is I'm so drained from that I can't really show up in the way that I'm supposed to for my business. So I was like, how can I break away, recharge, put the house on the market, wait for that to happen? That was the other thing is I was getting my house staged and ready for the sale. And because it's a seller's market, people are talking about liquidating properties or whatever. And so I'm like, I've created a gym here, but I'm faced at a crossroads. I know that I need to heal and I know that I need to be away from here, but I know that I can't really afford to just like own a house and be away. So I took a risk and had an offer within 2 days. So that was kind of confirmation and peace for me. So I'm closing next month and I'll have access to the equity, which was insane for me to have lived in my house for under 2 years. The market right now was just like insane. So all of the signs were pointing to sell, like from the signs, the side of, you know, financially and just wisdom and the side of just where I was in my life and me needing to just break free from a lot of systems, people, all this other stuff. So it was kind of like, you know, it kind of aligned itself. I was making the plans or whatever. I realized how cost effective it was. I'm paying like $80 a night in an Airbnb until my house is ready to go on the market. And I realized once it goes in the market, it could be 30 days, even if somebody made an offer that day. before closing. So am I going to just pay to live here in the cold where I'm stressed, anxious, and like not really able to recover from what I've just experienced? And it just didn't make sense. It was like the emotional cost of that and the financial cost of that is high. Some said, look at Costa Rica. I remember the article that I had read where it was super cheap. I was like, let's see how really cheap it is. It's probably not cheap for tourists. Let me go see what an Airbnb is like. Airbnb is a quarter of the price of what I would have been paying to stay in the States. So it just made sense. I booked the first week. I went and looked at the ticket. It was only $76. I was like, this has to be God giving me the way out.
It has like, to be God.
Has to be God. Like I felt him saying it. I felt him kind of easing me. Oh, and the last thing, and I didn't say this in my bio, and I'm trying to get better at it, is I'm a writer. And so I had just done a 3-day challenge with like this book group, and I was fired up, and I was remembering all these projects that I had paused, and I did, you know, clearly wasn't going to be able to do it under the level of stress that I was experiencing with all the decisions that I was trying to make. So I was like, okay, they're about to do this 21-day author boot camp, and I do have a book that I need to complete, and I do have the money to pay for this, and I can afford to be in Costa Rica to do it. And it's less than for me to stay here and not write the book, be stressed, et cetera. So I was kind of like, okay, God, I hear you clearly want me to write this book. I wrote the book in 14 days. The final week of that boot camp was me just doing editing and just basking in the glory that is like moving to Costa Rica. So really, I knew that I was moving here indefinitely, but I told myself that I was going to move here for 21 days to write a book. I didn't commit. I had committed in my soul, but I didn't commit out loud because I was like, what if something happens? Nothing happened. Everything was bliss. My finances are still intact. On the financial side of things, I borrowed from my retirement account because, again, I'm hoarding. I'm saving aggressively into my retirement account. 20%, like I max out. When it comes to that, like that's how savage I was with saving. But I realized that that was depriving me of the freedom that I
want y'all to hear that 20%. She went savage. 20%. Y'all, I can't even get y'all to do 6% to get the company match. She doing 3 times that. Go on.
Because I saw how aggressively it grew at 3% with a 3% match at my last place. And I was just like, dang, I'm really about to capitalize on this so that I can retire well. But that still wasn't allowing me to thrive in this season. And so I'm finding a balance in my mindset of that. So nevertheless, I was like, I don't necessarily want to borrow from that idea of borrowing, but it is my money that I'm borrowing. So I'm borrowing from it. I'm going to sell the house. I'll pay it back. So that gave me the additional cushion and security to be able to continue to pay the mortgage back there while living very cheaply over here. So I'm literally paying less than $500 a month for all of my living expenses. Like this studio apartment that I'm in right now was $536 on Airbnb. So you think about it, I'm not paying any additional like utilities, whatever. That's a really great way to live. And so my goal actually is once the house sells, is to kind of do this nomad thing for at least 6 more months. Like I'm really just exploring, enjoying myself, learning so much about life and people, and able to like do my business in a way that's healthy and relaxed and just beautiful and blissful and abundant for me. So that's how I ended up here. And that's why I'm staying.
And the beautiful part about it, I wanted to talk because I knew you would articulate it in a way better than I can. And for people to hear that, you know, it was deliberate.
Yes.
You thought it through. You took a risk. And the thing I love about your story, and people be like, Jamal, it's Costa Rica. It's not like she went to go live in Iceland. But the problem is when people think of picking up life and, you know, and going off and living in the city, I hear LA, New York, Miami, Atlanta, especially when you talk about me. Like when I tell people I'm moving to Dallas in a couple, they like, why Dallas? Why not Houston? That's where it's at. Yeah, but that's where it's at. That's where the trendy, that's where y'all think it's at. That's where it's not what my spirit told me. It's not. Right. I think people get kind of like what you said about people following the trends in regards to one person makes money this way and a whole bunch of people hoard on to the idea.
Yeah.
That's the same way when people make decisions about life, about moving to another city.
Yeah.
A bunch of people haven't done it, they'll follow it.
We are programmed to keep it safe and to be followers.
And I'm vlogging right now to, you know, as I transition to Dallas, I'm never going to turn it into a program. I just want to do it for the freedom of telling people this is what happened. This is how it is. Don't follow me to Dallas.
Why would you never turn it into a program?
Because it's not about the money for me. I want people to get the freedom of, all right, Jamal moved to Dallas. Cool. Maybe I can go move to Colorado. Maybe I can go move to to Wyoming. I don't want it to be about, oh, let me sell you this course for $4.99 about how do you transition from the industrial Northeast to Texas. It's not that type of party.
Right.
But I think people hearing that, you know, you made the transition from homeowner, like, and people always talk about how hard it is to unwind a house. It's so hard to unwind a house.
That's the thing. So much of this, it's too hard to do it. It's too hard to buy the house, so I'm going to rent. And there's benefits to both. I'm actually starting to see the benefit more and more about renting, but you still have to be disciplined and deliberate, but also like really intentional. Like, it's not just, I'm going to rent because it's safer. Like, you really have to have the wisdom to make it work for you financially. And so I think that's something that we all need to really work on is, there's benefits to both. So like shunning one or the other is because I'm literally about to have access to more money than I've ever had in my life when I sell this house. Like the equity that I had on the house in under 2 years, like there's clearly a benefit, but there's a risk as well. So, I mean, it's all.
Shout out to low key her telling y'all she where the money resides.
Chill.
She where the money resides, y'all.
Chill. No, it's not even like that. It's literally all accounted for, like the way that I have my investment plan set up. But
I like how, listen to her deliberateness. She's selling a house, six figures easy, going to have access in the bank. She's already got it planned out, not to spend, but to invest. That's what you call long-term thinking. She's not thinking about, oh, let me go get this luxury bag or this, because I want to come against the mindset of, because you earned this money or you did something to get it, that you deserve to splurge on luxury.
There is a balance to everything. You need to be able to enjoy your money and you need to be smart and able to make sure that you're enjoying the future money as well.
They enjoy the right now.
It's always a they with them. You know what? The coach in me is highlighting a couple things that I would love to unpack off the air with you.
Oh, she going to read me. She going to read me, y'all.
Whenever you're ready to be read.
but I think
I hope I answered the question.
No, you did. Not only that, but I think you gave people so much so that I already know in ahead in a couple of months we're gonna have to do this again. We're gonna have to do something with not more structure, but maybe an update, some stuff that you might have on your mind you might want to tackle with the culture, whatever.
Yeah, I love it. I want to talk about this stuff. Like, it's a lot that's unfolding very quickly, and all of it makes sense and it works. And it's all the stuff that we're afraid to do. Like, it literally makes sense and it works. It literally makes sense and it works. And we got to stop resisting it. We resist so much. And so that comes with, you know, getting the help, getting somebody to see where you're resisting.
So I always give the guests the last word to leave the listeners with something. So what you got for them? Like, and I'm excited for this because you've been dropping gems the whole time. So come on, Gandhi, give us something.
He said, Gandhi, I would say just stop resisting. There are things that we're resisting and we don't even know our spirits are resisting them. And once you discover what that is, then you'll get all the things that you want. I have not mastered it, but I've seen in a short period of time how quickly things align when you align. So figure out what you're resisting and align with what is for you. And a lot of time that comes with unpacking your fears. So yeah, embracing them actually gets you over them much more quickly than avoiding them. So that was a mouthful, but hopefully that was Gandhi enough for you. I was trying to not be Gandhi and be very much myself. So hopefully it landed somewhere.
Drop your social media handles, tell them where they could book your services if they so choose, you know, promote your business, do all that.
Great. So my new Instagram handle is Your Phase Life Coach. So you can follow me there. I want to demystify the arena of coaching by using content to kind of give people clarity on what it is. Since I started doing that, my numbers have actually gone up. It turns out a lot of people are just on the fence, but aren't really sure. And then once they know, they're like, boom, and we're in there. So what I'm doing right now is I have 10 slots a month, and those fill up really quickly with the woman that I'm already working with this month. So if you are interested, schedule a discovery call and get one of those slots. But also, I'm not the only life coach. Like, find a life coach that you can trust that aligns with your views and vision and goals, and get out there and do the work, because there is something that's blocking you. Like, wherever you are, there's another level, and there's something that you don't know about that level, and something that you are afraid of is probably keeping you from accessing it. So just get a coach, find a coach. I can source all types of coaches. I can make recommendations for days because I've invested significantly in coaching, but also there are websites that you can find. I did the research and kind of stumbled upon so many things. So yeah, it is an industry out there. If you're curious, ask about it, because more than likely you could very much benefit from it. My website is coachingwithbex.com or yourfavelifecoach.com, which routes back to coachingwithbex.com. And you can find out more about me there and my services as well.
Dang, I told you promote you. You promoted you and everybody else. I like that. We'd like to thank Becca for coming on. This was a dope episode. I didn't know what we were going to talk about when I booked it, but I just knew it was going to be great. So
you sound exactly like my clients.
For real. So I will have her on in the future. If you guys, you know, are listening to the episode, comment, let me know if you want me to bring it back for something specific, and I'll work that out with Becca. Per usual, this has been another episode of The Culture's Money, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.